You're listening to Wisconsin Public Radio. Larry Mueller here, talking now with a financial advisor about saving for retirement, about investing in the stock market, managing credit cards, and a whole lot more. And our guest is Brendan Durone, who is the CEO of E4 Insurance Services in Verona, Wisconsin. So as we talk with Brendan, I hope you'll join in with your own questions or comments. Let us know how you feel about your retirement account. What questions do you have about the stock market? Give us a call. The number is 800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Brendan Durone, welcome to the show. Thanks for joining us today.
Thanks for having me, Larry. I appreciate it.
As a financial advisor, just to, for the basics, how do you manage people's investments?
So in my role, I manage a team that helps work with advisors that do that. So day to day, I don't do that a whole lot. But that being said, it's all about balancing, risks and managing the consequences of those risks and trying to keep, clients on the right track so that they can stay in the market and keep moving forward.
Yeah. And when people talk about the investment folks often talk about wealth building. What does that actually mean, wealth building?
Well, that high level, spending less than you make is a great place to start. And if you save that money somewhere else, first off, you want to have a rainy day fund just for emergencies. But ideally, you invest in something that will generate more return than when you put it in. And then at some point, when you decide that you no longer want to work, you have a pool of assets that you can draw from and have that supplement your retirement income. So you got to build that wealth if you want it to be there when you retire and you can take distributions.
Let's talk about ways here. There, we've got stocks, we've got bonds, we've got mutual funds. When you're talking to somebody, or maybe just talk about the differences among those three, stocks, bonds, and mutual funds.
Well, a stock is a little ownership within a company. A bond is debt that a company may issue, and a mutual fund could be a collection of either of those or a combination of both, in that you don't necessarily own a stock individually. You have a mutual fund that could have multiple stocks based on the type of mutual fund that it is.
And can the average person, or how does the average person typically join the stock market?
Now, there's a lot of different ways, but I would say if somebody that doesn't have any experience, work with a financial advisor, find somebody that can help you do that. Being from NAFA, that's where you got my contact information. I'd encourage anybody thinking about their financial future to work with a NAFA member. NAFA is the National Association of Insurance and Financial Advisors, and their members are held to high ethical standards. And they put clients first, and that would, if you're looking for somebody to work with, an AFA member would be a great person.
Yeah, and I think, what do you think, between the NASDAQ and the New York Stock Exchange, I think there's like, 6,000 different stock options that you could pick from?
Yeah, there are a lot. If you wanted to invest in individual stocks, which I would say is probably not the best course for the general public. Yeah, you've got a multitude of options between the different stock exchanges. You've got, penny stocks. There's unlisted stocks. You need to know a lot about that company if you're going to invest individually in it, in my opinion.
Yeah, and how are the prices determined for a stock?
Well, some would say it's they're not rational or it's funny math, but I would say high level, you look at a company's future earnings you use some discount method to put that into today's dollars, and that should represent, you know, the value of the company. And then depending on how many shares they have issued, that will determine the value of that stock.
And okay, so as a financial advisor, you help clients build what's called an investment portfolio.
Correct.
Some are built on 401ks, some are on IRAs and annuities. Others kind of exist on their own, if I'm not mistaken. So how do...
Yeah, those are different, I guess, tax treatments and ways that, you can invest. A 401k is a, you know, a company-sponsored program, and you can have, you know, some of your paycheck either before or after taxes, depending if it's a Roth 401k or not, allocated to that investment. Most companies will match in some capacity to help encourage you to do that. As 401ks have become more popular, pensions have gone to the wayside, but that's used to be how companies would help retirees, is create a pension for them and incentivize them to stay with the company long term. Now they do 401ks. An IRA, similar, you know, tax treatment to a 401k, but it's just an individual retirement account. And the government has created these tax benefits to help encourage people to save for their retirement, so they're not all, you know, dependent on the government or Social Security.
Yeah. And the Roth, you mentioned Roth. The Roth IRA and a traditional IRA, a little different, and there's different limitations, I think, on at least on the Roth IRA.
Yeah, different rules on how you can contribute and, you know, what you're required to take out. The Roth IRA, basically contributions are going in after tax, and that grows, and it's tax deferred. And then when you take the money out, you're not paying any additional taxes, where an IRA goes in before taxes, and any distribution from that comes out, you know, entirely taxable. In, you know, my opinion is that we're in at this point, a fairly favorable tax era, especially when you look at taxes historically. When you look at the big picture of all the things that we're doing, I think tax rates are going to have to be higher in the future. So therefore, I think a Roth IRA makes a lot of sense if somebody can contribute to that, either in a Roth 401k or individually.
Yeah, it makes sense. Helen in Madison has a question or two for you. Let's go there. Helen, hi.
Hi there. Two questions. I have just retired, and all my money is in retirement accounts, tax-deferred retirement accounts. And a big portion of that is in guaranteed annuities. So the first question has to do with whether it would help or make any sense or be pointless to hire a financial advisor to help me kind of, deal with that. Or is that simple enough that I just need to figure out what my annuity is going to be, and I'm going to have to pay taxes on everything, so... I guess I don't know if when is the situation complicated enough to benefit from a financial advisor is the first question.
Yeah.
Okay. I'll answer that one first. I absolutely think it would make sense to, you know, work with a financial advisor. I would interview, you know, a couple of them, and some of them, you know, aren't going to charge a fee up front. Others could charge a fee for a plan. Take a look at, you know, how they work and their different options. I mean, you are correct that if everything is tax deferred, you know, there's not a lot of strategy they can play from that standpoint to, you know, pull from non-qualified or if you have, you know, life insurance. That being said, it's, you know, these are the critical years in your retirement. Right after you retire, sequence of return risk is the biggest. And I think having a financial advisor and somebody else there to help coach you on that process is well worth, you know, the cost involved.
Yeah. And Helen, your second question?
The second question is kind of related to something he just said, and that is the majority of my invested funds are in guaranteed annuities already. I'm divorced with no children and have, what's the expression, want to die with zero. So is there any reason not to just turn everything into annuities for a guaranteed stream of income, since I'm not really interested in trying to, whatever, follow the market, I guess.
Yeah, and I believe annuities are great, and they provide that income, and retirees have a lot more peace of mind with income. That being said, you never want to have all your eggs in one basket and have all of your, you know, investments, you know, in annuities when the market might be able to yield more. You don't know how long you're going to live. I understand that, you know, you're okay dying with $0, but unless you can tell me when you are going to die, I can't give you the best strategy.
On that note, Helen, if you have other questions, you can stay with us. But we're going to break for the news, but we'll be back with Brendan Durone of E4 Insurance Services in Verona in just a few minutes. Talking with a financial advisor today about saving for retirement, investing in the stock market, managing credit cards, and a whole lot more. Our guest, Brendan Durone, is the CEO of E4 Insurance Services in Verona. It's great to have him with us. And certainly, I hope you'll join in. Do you feel confident with your retirement saving plan? Let us know your plan, maybe, or maybe you have a question. Give a call. The number is 800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. And let's go to Tim in O'Connell, who has a question, I believe. Tim, hi.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call. About a year ago, the major company that I work for changed administrators of our 401k, and apparently one of the benefits to this is that you are able to invest with them some or all of your vested amount of money that you have in your 401k. And, you know, I've amassed a fair amount of money here over the years in my 401k. I contribute to contribute heavily, and I'm 61 years old, and I don't know how much I really want to mess with this. I think this is a fairly new type of thing within 401ks. I was just wondering if you think it's a good idea, or do I just stay the course the way I've been going?
That's a complicated question. I think what they're saying you can do is an in-service distribution. And that means that you can take the money out of your 401k and manage it in any investment where within your 401k you have limited options. I don't see that as a bad thing. Do you work with a financial advisor already, Tim?
I actually work with two financial advisors, and then this administrator is a third, and everybody wants the money. And they want all of it. Nobody wants a third of it to kind of test them out and see who does the best.
Yep. I would say that I'm not a fan of having multiple, you know, financial advisors. Now, you can have people in individual specialties and may focus on that. Somebody that could, you know, work with your insurance, you know, somebody that could do investments. But having, you know, multiple financial advisors is like having, you know, three starting quarterbacks. Who's going to get the ball? Who's going to make the decisions? And, you know, where are you going? You may think you're having diversification, but they could be all putting you in the same thing and not being diversified. So my suggestion would be to, you know, work with either one of the two that you're already or the plan administrator on your 401k. But, you know, again, it's also like having, you know, having multiple doctors, but all generalists, not a specialty, doesn't make a ton of sense. Yeah. Not saying any one of them doesn't do a good job. It's just they're limited doing their job. If you know, from waist down, one of your doctors treats you, and from waist up, the other.
Okay. Tim, there you go. Thank you. You had some decisions to make there. Let's go to Neil in Winona, Minnesota. Hi, Neil.
Hi, good afternoon. Say, I am 61 years old, getting ready to retire, and as soon as next year or maybe a couple of years, not really sure, I'm going to be relying on my Social Security. I've got a pension. I've got a health care savings account and another secondary retirement or savings, I guess you want to call it. And that's an IRA, so I'm deferring the taxes until I start drawing on it, I guess. So I guess my theory, that my thought process there is that when I start drawing on that, I'll have less income, and so the taxes would be lower. I guess that's my first question. Is that logical thinking? And then the big question is, they always ask you, how much do you need in retirement? And I mean, how do you even figure, how do you know that? Do you have any pointers on how to,
Yeah.
Sure.
So let's start with your first question, yeah. In theory, yes, your taxes should be lower in retirement because you're not, making money. That being said, and that goes right into your second question, how much do you need in retirement? If all of your money is qualified or before tax, and you're pulling out, the same amount of dollars that you made, then your tax rate, you may not be in a lower, tax bracket. And that's assuming all taxes stay the same. The one thing we know with government is nothing is going to stay the same, and tax rates are going to change and things are going to happen. So is it going to be higher or lower? I can't tell you for certain, but your theory is sound if everything holds true. As far as figuring out how much you need in retirement, I would look at your spending today. Most of those, expenses aren't going to change. The one thing that could change is healthcare, especially if you retire before 65. So make sure to plan on that. That is not, a little expense. And then the other thing that I would say a lot of retirees, have happen is when you don't have to go to a day job anymore, you find more ways to spend your money. You want to go out and do things and travel, and that doesn't come free generally.
Yeah. I think most of my friends won't find that they're spending more money than they were before. So it is something you got to think about. That's for sure. If you can think about it, well, at least what I'm making now and maybe a little more probably isn't a bad way to think.
And as I said, healthcare, even after, 65, people get old. You need to have more surgeries. You got downtime. You might need help. Let alone, long-term care. Neil, if you don't have a long-term care, insurance policy, I would ask, what is your plan and what are you going to do and how are you going to, take care of that? So those are all things that, a financial advisor can help you with and help you figure out how to plan for those consequences.
Yeah, absolutely. Good luck, though, Neil. Thank you so much for calling. Sherry in Colfax, we'll go to you now. Hi, Sherry.
Hi. I have a question. My husband is going to be 70, and I'm going to be 69. And we have about $750,000 in a CD, a lump CD, and about $100,000 in Roth CD IRAs, and probably about $350,000 in cash. And I know at some age coming up, the government's going to tell us how much we have to take out of our saving or out of our CD or whatever, but I don't know how to figure that out. And the bank said they don't know how to figure that out. And it seems like I'm just waiting and waiting and waiting. And do you have a clue as to how much they're going to make us take out and when?
Yeah. So, and is is that CD that you have, is that qualified dollars, do you know? Is it an IRA CD?
No, it's just a regular CD, and it'll be up in a year, about June again. And then we'll have to decide what we want to do.
So then that CD, the government isn't going to make you take anything out. It's just the money that is, so you said you had $100K IRA?
That's a Roth.
Okay, that's a Roth. So, again, you're
that's
not going to be...
Roth, the IRA, yeah.
Yeah. So do you have any traditional IRA or 401K?
Nope, nothing. We have, it's all liquid.
Okay, so then from what you've told me, I don't think any of your assets are going to be, you know, mandated for RMDs or required minimum distributions. So you will be okay.
Yeah. And typically RMDs, they, if I'm not mistaken, they start at one level and then they go up a little bit each year as time goes.
Yeah. So start, they start at, you know, 73, unless the rules have changed with the Secure Act 1.0, 2.0, or age 75 if you're born 60 or later. But yes, that amount or required minimum distribution percentage goes up each year you get older.
Yeah, they want to make sure they get all their tax money out of
it. You've deferred taxes from the government. They want to make sure they get theirs in due course.
Sherry, thank you for calling. Judy in Fitchburg emailed us. She has a question about property casualty insurance companies. Why are the major insurance companies like State Farm and Allstate pulling out of states or regions with high climate change related catastrophes such as floods, hurricanes, and wildfires? She thought the whole point of insurance was to price risk correctly. Don't those companies have actuaries who can correctly price the risk? Or is climate change such a huge risk that it is changing the entire insurance business model?
So the property and casualty landscape is not my specialty, but what I would say is, yes, they have actuaries and they can price that risk. It doesn't mean that people want to pay it and they can get enough. Insurance by definition is the law of large numbers, and they need to get enough people to diversify that risk. But also when you look at climate change and flooding, it's, you know, those are massive claims. As a business, it's not their job to insure everybody. They've decided it does not make business sense to be in that area, which is why they've pulled out.
Hmm. Sam in Oshkosh, your turn. Hi, Sam.
Yes, the question is how to maximize the amount that I can leave to my descendants. I have a property that's about $500,000. I have a 401k that's about $200,000. How to leave the money to my children?
How many children do you have, by the way?
Oh, three.
Three children? Okay.
Best way to do that is to spend less. That being said, you know, you don't want to necessarily sacrifice your life just for your kids, although I think that's what being a parent is about. You can put, you know, assuming that you are still healthy, life insurance is a great way to transfer wealth from one generation to the next. The other thing, you know, as people get older, their investments generally become more conservative, which makes sense because you want to make sure that you don't run out of money. But if you are investing for your children's benefit and not yours, you could be a little more aggressive in the market that way as well.
So I was thinking the reason I asked about the number of children is the tax rates on, if you die and pass on, in his case, what was it, about $600,000 or $700,000, That's probably not going to be, is that going to be taxed by at any rate to the children?
It really depends on what sort of investment it is in. I mean, again, if it's qualified or a annuity, there will be, you know, taxes due to the decedents. If it's in life insurance, in, you know, given the numbers that he explained, life insurance passes completely income tax free to the beneficiaries. A Roth IRA would, you know, pass tax free. The house that he mentioned, they should be able to get a step up in basis. So I think a lot of that he mentioned would be able to pass tax free, but without doing a deep dive, I can't say for certain.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Sam, thank you. Kurt in Watertown. Hi. What's on your mind?
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I am, I'm 64 and, I'm married and I've got total assets between houses and cars and 401ks and another IRA of about $1 million. I'm starting to put a will together and I'm thinking about a trust. I think it's a living trust, right? Where you move things in, and I'm not quite sure if it's worth the hassle to go through that or if it's what the value of having a living trust is. So I was hoping you could answer that.
I would say that the biggest benefit of having a living trust is to be able to avoid probate for you. Probate, depending on your situation, can cost anywhere to, you know, 3 to 6%, sometimes a hair more, of your assets. So, that's the value in doing that. From an economic standpoint, you also have the ability to, you know, control some things from the grave. You know, if you want to decide how the money is distributed after the fact, you can put those sort of trust provisions in, and again, be able to control, you know, some of the disbursement later. But given what you've said, I think a trust would make sense. I would work with a local attorney, and they can also ask some questions that can help guide what you do.
Yeah, for sure. Kurt, thank you for calling. Diane in Madison emailed us. She's retired, and all of her retirement funds are in qualified accounts. She gives generously to charities and takes the deductions when she itemizes. She'd like to use a QCD in order to reduce her gross income, but was told she can't take QCD from her qualified accounts. Wondering how to handle this. A rollover IRA? And if so, is that transaction taxable?
A rollover IRA in itself would not be taxable, as that's just, you know, moving it from, call it a 401k, to an IRA and, you know, keeping it in that same tax status, so tax deferred. And then, you know, as far as doing a qualified charitable distribution, she can do that from an IRA. So I missed what you said her investment was originally in. It was just qualified is what I heard.
Yeah, she said all qualified accounts.
Yeah, so assuming that it's in a 401k right now, then yes, doing a rollover to an IRA would allow her to be able to do that QCD.
Jenny, who's 30 years old, wonders what percentage of her money should she consider investing?
Well, there's not a lot to go on there. A ballpark is, you know, if you want to be on the good side, 10 to 15% of your income. But I'd want to know, you know, does Jenny have a, you know, emergency fund? Does she have disability income? You know, at her age, losing, you know, what if she gets sick or hurt? What is she going to do? Does she have beneficiaries? Does she have life insurance? You know, all these things are important steps that we want to make sure we have covered before, you know, we figure out how much we're going to invest.
Yeah. I often hear about from people who are saving to put kids through college and aren't sure how they can do that and save for retirement. What advice do you have there?
I mean, there are some vehicles that you can use that would, you know, cover both. But yeah, it's hard. Retirement is, you want to save a lot for retirement. College is not cheap. It's not getting cheaper. I know a lot of people will use, you know, something like cash value life insurance, which has, you know, tax deferred and tax free buildup. You can take loans from that to help pay for college and then later use that, you know, for retirement. It also becomes a, you know, a self-fulfilling prophecy in that if you happen to die, now you have death benefit proceeds to help, you know, pay for your kids' college, your spouse's retirement. So there's a multitude of options, but it's not easy.
Bruce from Madison emailed, his grandmother's sister-in-law gave a trust fund, mainly dividend-paying stocks, to his grandmother, who then passed it to his father. Bruce's dad is now in his 90s and has passed it on to his three children. Bruce would like to transfer his portion from Siebert to a different brokerage that has the Think or Swim trading platform, but many of the stocks do not have a stated purchase price. What would happen in this case? Does he need to have the prices at which they were transferred to him, or how can he go about getting them?
Yeah, I mean, not a lot of detail there. It depends on how they were transferred to him. If it happened to be transferred at death, then, you know, you'd get a step up in basis at that, you know, previous owner's death. That's, you know, when that happened and he took over, that would be his starting value. But I can't hazard a guess, really.
What's the biggest mistake people typically make when they plan for retirement?
Not starting soon enough.
Yeah. Yeah, it's. I think you're probably right about that.
Yeah, it's, compounding, eighth wonder of the world. The sooner you get started, you know, the better you are. To the question before, I think, can it be done by yourself? Absolutely. But working with a financial professional really makes a lot of sense, in my opinion. And I couldn't recommend more that they look for an AFA member.
Yeah, I would agree. Just one quick note of my own. I happened to come into a little bit of money at the time my daughter was born, and I put it into a college investment plan, and it was enough money to begin with, you know, $20,000 that. By the time she was 18 and ready to go to college, so she had 18 years of that.
Mm-hmm.
There were no problems with that doubling every 5 or 6 years made quite a difference.
Yeah, depending on when you had it invested and what you had it invested in, there could have been some very good runs over 18 years.
There were some very good runs, and I'm really happy about that. And Brendan, really happy to have you with us today. It's been great. Would you come back and be with us again sometime again?
Happy to, anytime.
Oh, it was great. Brendan Derone, our guest today, he's CEO of E4 Insurance Services in Verona. It was great to have him with us today. Coming up, we're going to talk about some work going on about glioblastoma, a common and aggressive brain tumor. That's our next topic. Stay with us. I'm Larry Mueller for WPR News.